Good afternoon. This is KDNK, commercial-free since 1983. This is Marilyn Gleason, and it's time for Valley Voices. Today, Valley Voices will sound a little different as we join Carbondale's own Benta Berkland and her colleagues for a radio journey through redistricting efforts as they show up in Colorado. This is part one of the latest edition of Purplish from CPR and the Colorado Capital News Alliance. We'll hear part two next week on municipal matters. By the way, Purplish is a winner in the recent Signal Awards. The Signal Awards seeks to honor and celebrate the people and content that raise the bar for podcasting. In October's annual contest, Purplish won a gold and a Listener's Choice Award in the local news show category. Then later on this hour, KHOL, our sister RIMCOR station in Jackson Hole, has a reporter on the ground at the periphery of the conflict in Ukraine. We're going to hear a report from Emily Cohen, who joined a volunteer convoy shuttling needed supplies into the war zone. But first, in state houses across the country, the political playing field is being redrawn as states wade into the murky waters of mid-cycle redistricting. President Donald Trump kicked off this effort when he urged Republicans in Texas to draw new congressional maps years ahead of schedule. Then came Missouri and North Carolina, and earlier this month, California voters agreed to put aside their independently drawn map and give Democrats more seats. Colorado, a blue state where Republicans hold as many congressional seats as Democrats, is a tempting target as Democrats look to further offset Republican gains. But not so fast. CPR's Benta Berkland and Caitlin Kim dive into the guardrails Colorado voters put in place years ago to keep politics out of the state's redistricting process, and why changes to the process could be slow and costly. They're joined by NPR's Larry Kaplow, who has been covering this issue on the national level. So sit back, my friends, stay tuned, and take a deep dive into redistricting and how it plays out in Colorado with our amazing team of political reporters at CPR.
In state houses across the country, the political playing field is being redrawn.
Overnight, the Texas House of Representatives approved the controversial new voting maps designed to help Republicans keep control of Congress in next year's midterm elections. The new
maps, President Donald Trump kicked off this effort when he urged Republican leaders in Texas to redraw congressional maps years ahead of schedule. That was the first domino, and more red states followed.
Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe officially signing the controversial new congressional map into law today.
North Carolina just the latest state to try and draw a new congressional map for the 2026 election, all in an effort to win control of the closely divided U.S. House.
At the same time, Democratic states have been scrambling to offset those gains.
We can make a projection in California. The polls are closed as of now, and CNN projects that Californians have indeed voted yes on the state's newly drawn congressional district map, aiming to help Democrats.
California's new map aims to cancel out Texas with five more Democratic seats. In his victory speech, the state's governor, Gavin Newsom, called on other blue states to join the effort.
We need the state of Virginia. We need the state of Maryland. We need our friends in New York, in Illinois, in Colorado. We need to see other states with the remarkable leaders that have been doing remarkable things meet this moment head on as well to recognize what we're up against in 2026.
These new maps are all facing court challenges, and we don't know which ones will survive. Regardless, it's still an issue gaining a lot of traction in Colorado, with some leading Democrats saying they're ready to jump into the fray.
I am not going to sit around and watch that just happen on my watch and go and do a battle with one arm tied behind my back. I'm not going to do it.
I don't want Colorado to do this. I didn't want Texas to do this. What I want Colorado to make clear is that if necessary, we will do our part.
I think this evolution process has been disturbing, and that's why I'm currently publicly supporting efforts to basically do the same thing in here in Colorado.
But it's not that simple. Colorado has strong guardrails on when and how its maps are drawn, meant to keep politics out of the process.
Any changes to those rules would be slow, costly, and could carry a political risk.
Thank you.
This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance, a show about Colorado politics and policy. I'm Benta Berkland. The state-by-state fight for mid-decade partisan redistricting has been raging for months, and Colorado keeps getting mentioned by Democrats desperate to find more seats. In this episode, we're going to take a look at what some Democrats hope could happen here and what stands in the way of that. I can think of no better person to join us on this journey than my colleague Caitlin Kim. She covers Colorado's congressional delegation in Washington, D.C. She knows this issue inside and out. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi, Benta.
So, in normal times, congressional maps are only supposed to be redrawn once a decade after the census. And this is because each House district needs to roughly have the same number of people in it, and populations shift over time. But now, exactly in the middle of the decade, 5 years away from the census, states are racing to do this.
Yes, and as we mentioned, this started when President Trump turned up the heat on Texas. He told CNBC over the summer that his party is, quote, entitled to more seats because he claimed blue states have unfairly gerrymandered maps.
We have an opportunity in Texas to pick up 5 seats. We have a really good governor and we have good people in Texas. And I won Texas. I got the highest vote in the history of Texas, as you probably know. And we are entitled to 5 more seats.
Going back to that rationale Trump is claiming, that he just wants to offset unfair gerrymandering by blue states, Princeton University has a gerrymandering tracker, and it does give low grades to some Democratic states, like Illinois and Oregon, but it shows a lot more gerrymandered red states. And this is from before all of this recent back and forth started, so, I mean, gerrymandering is not a new issue.
What Trump set off is actually, though, really unprecedented. And the stakes are high. There's such a narrow Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, and the party in power usually does poorly in the midterms. So things could look very different for his agenda over the next 2 years if Democrats can win back a political chamber, namely the House.
And this is where Colorado comes in. You can see why Democrats wanted to redraw maps. It's a blue state. But Colorado's House delegation is evenly split, 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats. It wouldn't take too much to really tilt these districts to Democrats' advantage.
So with all that in play, that's why we're revisiting redistricting years before we ever thought we'd have to.
To understand why Colorado Democrats can't just rush to put out some new maps, you first have to understand how redistricting works here.
So back in 2018, voters approved setting up an independent redistricting commission with the idea that having citizens draw the maps would take politics out of the process.
And it was a pretty big deal. The state legislature agreed unanimously to put this idea on the ballot as a constitutional amendment, and voters passed this amendment by 70%. I mean, that's a really wide margin.
Yes, and the amendment is really detailed. It requires 12 commission members split evenly between Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated voters. You know, these people aren't appointed by the political parties. There's actually a really complicated process to pick commissioners to ensure no one slips in as a ringer.
And in 2021, the state used the commission for the first time.
Hey, at 6:01, I will call this Colorado Independent Congressional Redistricting Commission meeting to order.
The work wasn't easy. If you'll recall, the pandemic was still going on, and the census data came out behind schedule.
I have that KBCO song they play all the time caught in my head, that bittersweet, it's sweet then bitter, bitter then sweet, to where we are at in the cycle right now in the process.
These meetings were public. They're streamed online because one of the big values from this amendment was transparency. No backroom deals. Commissioners couldn't meet or talk privately. Instead, they held meetings all across the state and gave the public a chance to weigh in on what was important for them.
The new potential District 8 includes Broomfield and some Front Range Plains towns, whereas I think Greeley would be a better fit with those towns.
You put CD5 all in El Paso County. Where is the line of demarcation that you've cut off the southeast part of the district?
People on the western slope deserve to have a representative who lives on the Western Slope and understands their concerns.
The amendment also sets criteria for how the district should be formed.
Yes, on a basic level, districts have to contain the same number of people, have contiguous borders, and comply with the Voting Rights Act.
They're also supposed to be as compact as practical and try to keep cities and counties whole as much as possible, like not splitting up Denver seven different ways.
Yes, and they're also supposed to preserve communities of interest, which is sort of an abstract idea, but as we heard from the tape, could be an example of trying to keep farmers on the Eastern Plains together in a district or keeping Hispanic communities in Southern Colorado together.
And finally, the commission was tasked with creating as many swing districts as possible.
I'm not troubled by putting Custer in CD3, but I am troubled by the imbalance in the competitiveness.
This requirement that Colorado has to maximize competitive districts is unique. Even other states with independent commissions don't have to do that.
Yeah, and while that's true, I would also stress it's the last criteria on the list. And that 2021 process led to a final map that had four Democratic seats, three Republican ones, and just one swing seat.
I mean, I think that's right. There's one true toss-up in the state, but some of Colorado's other districts are somewhat competitive at times. Colorado District 7 got less blue in the new maps, and history suggests CD3 might be flippable. Lauren Boebert almost lost that seat.
And you and I have had a lot of discussions about this and how much of, you know, CD3 was made flippable because of candidate quality, you know, the Lauren Boebert effect. But to your bigger point, you know, if you get a wave year, maybe some of these seats could be in play. But to get us back on redistricting track, I do want to get into some reporting I've been doing recently, talking with a bunch of the commissioners that served in that 2021 process. Carly Hare chaired the commission. She was an unaffiliated voter and says the constitutional amendment really did give them clear direction, which made their very difficult job a little bit easier.
It gave us not a direct blueprint because we had to build the plane while we were flying it the entire time, but it did give us some framing and some guideposts to stay within and really allowed us to be expansive inside of that in different ways.
Over the years, Colorado has received praise for how it draws its maps, relatively free of political interference. In fact, the Princeton gerrymandering project gave the state an A in partisan fairness.
We should do this in a way that other people can see and replicate. And I think the only way to replicate is to offer transparency.
That's Jolie Bronner. She was the commission's vice chair and another unaffiliated voter.
No one was 100% happy with us, but I think that's because we actually listened to people and tried to come up with the most equitable maps we could.
This is something I heard from a lot of the commissioners that I spoke with, that they were really trying to be, as Republican Commissioner Bill Leone put it, relentlessly nonpartisan.
If somebody said, well, we need to have more districts that are going to be Democrat districts or more districts that are going to be Republican districts, we tamped that down very quickly because we weren't trying to get to a preordained outcome.
One thing I'll note, though, is that the maps the Independent Commission finally picked did leave quite a few Democrats unhappy. They felt that it sacrificed fair representation in the name of competitiveness. Basically, Colorado's solidly blue, but the map created the possibility of a politically balanced House delegation, which is exactly what we have right now.
But at the end of the day, the people I spoke with who have been involved in this process say they were chosen to represent Colorado voters, draw fair maps, and that those maps were meant to last for 10 years until we have new census data. That's the process and the goal.
I can imagine the people closely involved with Colorado's process are watching what's happening nationally with redistricting very closely. I don't expect they're happy with what they're seeing.
Yes, the people that I talked to, some of the words they used to describe this push for mid-cycle redistricting were disappointed, angry, and they all say it's bad for democracy. I asked Paula Espinoza, a Democrat who served on the commission, about it. She said it was disheartening to her as an individual to see such efforts happening around the country.
To use these districts as a means to sway one party or another is not the American way, in my opinion. I think that The idea of congressional districts is to fairly and to the most extent possible represent the people of that district and their interests. And that should be the goal, not to swing the country one way or another.
One thing we should be clear about is this same constitutional amendment that sets the rules for redistricting in Colorado also says the state only gets to do it once a decade, right after the census.
Yeah, and it's not just in the amendment. Even before that passed, the state Supreme Court had already ruled against mid-cycle redistrictings in Colorado.
That's just another reason why Colorado, unlike Texas or other states, lawmakers can't just throw out the current map and vote in something new.
Even as some Colorado elected officials are talking about wanting to join the redistricting fight, they're up against a really daunting logistical reality. When you put redistricting rules in your constitution, you have to go back to the constitution and to the voters if you want to change it.
That said, the recent vote in California shows those kind of obstacles can be overcome if there's enough political will. Whether that could happen in Colorado is what we're going to get to next. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance.
And you're listening to Purplish today on Valley Voices here at KDNK. That was part one of this episode of Purplish, taking a journey into the heart of the redistricting beast here in Colorado. We will hear part two next week on Municipal Matters. That's on Wednesday afternoon at 4:30. Purplish comes to us at KDNK and to you through the Colorado Capital News Alliance and CPR. In the Mountain West, van life is a familiar sight. Travelers hitting the road, living out of their vehicles, chasing adventure. But thousands of miles away in Ukraine, the war with Russia has forced people to rethink life on the move, not for adventure, but for survival. Ukraine's military depends on civilian drivers to ferry everything from medical kits to donated ambulances into the war zone. KHOL's Emily Cohen joined one of these volunteer convoys and met a woman who's turned her own version of van life into a lifeline shuttling vehicles across borders, sometimes with just a few hours' notice. So for the next few minutes, we will hear from Emily Cohen, our friend up there from our Rocky Mountain Community Radio Station, KHOL, in Jackson Hole.
It's 6 a.m. outside of a hotel parking lot in Katowice, Poland. A line of ambulances is warming up in the cold morning air. I hop in the passenger seat of a mustard yellow Mercedes Sprinter ambulance. 44-year-old Oksana Berleva is driving.
I came the day before yesterday. In a bus, I spent 22 hours from Kyiv to Katowice. It's crazy.
She's here to drive a donated ambulance back to Ukraine. This is her 19th trip transporting SUVs, trucks, and ambulances to her country. But when the war started nearly 4 years ago, she didn't imagine this would be her role.
But there is something in our nation that we woke up, all of us woke up, in 20 seconds.
She and her neighbors were handing out coffee to soldiers one day and loading magazines into Kalashnikovs the next.
They stood on near my house. I gave them coffee and they taught everything this because they didn't know how to do it. Yes, in every village, in every house, big house with flats, it was some guy or veteran or just a colonel or somebody who had experience of war. And he said, we need here, we just meet here, blah, blah, blah.
Much of Ukraine's defense runs this way, not through official government channels, but through people like Berleva, regular citizens on Telegram channels, raising money, planning what to do. In fact, there's a volunteer group, the Territorial Defense Forces, made up of regular people fighting alongside the country's army. Berleva eventually found her place helping her country as a driver.
Usually the most popular requests for volunteer drivers in Ukraine is, we go tomorrow, can you?
This time, she got a few hours' notice. A used ambulance dealer in France working with an American NGO had lined up a convoy of more than two dozen vehicles heading into Ukraine. She grabbed a backpack, her phone charger, and cigarettes. On the road, she relaxes a little. She listens to music, podcasts. She's able to get a few nights of sleep in a hotel without air raid alarms.
I'm not a shopaholic in my real life. I don't go to shops and everything. But here, when I come into the big mall and see that there are no alarms, the mall will not close now, I just walk.
Berleva is one of just two Ukrainians on this trip, which is a mix of international volunteers, though largely Americans, veterans, former Peace Corps volunteers, curious do-gooders. Most of her missions are small ad hoc efforts organized by Ukrainians themselves. And when she crosses into the EU to pick up vehicles, it's women making the trek with her.
Some men are on the war. Other men are hiding from the war. And not many guys can pass the border from Ukraine. They are not allowed. It's very difficult to get permission to leave Ukraine.
She'll go straight to wherever the car is, sometimes days of travel, just to turn around and drive back.
Sometimes we take one small car of a woman, four or five drivers. It was coming to this small car, go to another country, and then one girl lives in this car, and we take four other cars to Ukraine, like this.
It's like a relay race across borders. A car in Germany, Spain, or France. Find it, pick it up, drive it partway, and then hand it off. It's often a gamble what condition the vehicles will be in, hopefully good enough to make the long trek back to Ukraine, and then to the east, where they must withstand roads pockmarked with rubble and potholes. Before the war, Berleva owned a coffee shop in Kyiv. Now she's a manager for a cosmetics distribution company. She works remotely, which means she can disappear for a few days to drive across the continent. Her husband is on the front lines in eastern Ukraine. But suddenly, her eyes light up. She spots a Land Rover. She has a friend with this same model SUV. He was an influencer of sorts. Driving across Europe and Africa, he collected stickers from the countries he visited. Berleva says his car became a symbol of freedom.
Ugh. It's a disturbing topic. You know, when I drive cars previously, I didn't think about all the things that you ask me. I was just looking around, thinking about car, other cars.
She tells me that before the war, she and her husband had a dream of traveling.
We had a small Volkswagen T4 multivan, which transformed in a bed. It's possible to live in it. And we had some trips on our sea in Odessa, in Carpathians, in Ukraine. And we had a dream to travel around Europe by such autovan.
Where I live in Wyoming, people also chase this dream for powder days and sunsets, calling it van life. For some, it's freedom. For others, van life is the only way to afford a home in a place that has gotten too expensive. Berleva and I are the same age. We've probably scrolled the same photos on social media. Mountain roads, little kitchens with tables that fold out.
And he dreamed to have another big car for this to transform to everything. And now when I have such travels, I tell him about which cars I see, what is here. So, and we dream more than we will go to our trip a little later. And he asked me find some empty car, like ambulance, but empty, to transform it. I say, no, when you be back after the war, because it's too long, 4 years here on the war already, you will be back, we will do everything.
Berleva pauses, tears up, and then looks down at her phone.
Oh, 7 minutes, wow. Time passed quickly when we spoke. Ah, but thank you that... You asked which questions you put me, but it's really hard to realize everything in words and to express it.
We're almost at our stopping point for the day. a rest area before crossing the border back into Ukraine.
The easiest way is to be a refugee from Ukraine, just to leave the country, and that's all. But maybe those who are in Ukraine now, they write the history of this land.
Berleva chooses to drive. It's both her act of hope and a way to experience a taste of van life, a dream on hold for nearly 4 years. I'm Emily Cohen, Lviv, Ukraine.
That came to us through Rocky Mountain Community Radio. Emily Cohen from KHOL up there in Jackson, Wyoming, a part of our little circle of community radio stations far afield and bringing that story back to us here in Carbondale. Rocky Mountain Community Radio, of course, is a network of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including KDNK.